Hello everyone and welcome back to The Resistance with your host DJ Revolution on the one and only Penguin Radio. First, to start today, I just want to start off by really honoring the phenomenally beautiful legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So I just want to start off with why she meant so much to me, and I think a lot of other people and women in general and everyone she fought for. She was an awesome advocate, and she just fought for so many years, and I think that's so respectable. So I'm actually a political science major, and I chose to be a political science major directly after I viewed On the Basis of Sex, which is a movie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life and how she was able to become who she is today. And it was just so inspiring how she actually went through law school with a daughter and a husband that was fighting cancer. And so when she was in law school, not only did she have to attend her classes and do well in her classes, she also had to attend her husband's classes and bring that work back to him. And think about it, back then there was nothing to record the lectures, so she had to take notes and just help her husband study while she was one of the top people in her class in law school. And so I just find her so awesome because she made so many changes, especially during a time period that change really wasn't welcome. And so she's so inspiring to me, just because she jumped over hurdles that not a lot of other women would have been able to. And in one interview she did with NPR, she stated that she has really no regrets in her life because in the time period that she was a lawyer, if she was a lawyer now, she would just be retired by now and just be another lawyer. But the time period that she became a lawyer was so influential to her because she was able to challenge these things that she knew were wrong, and that's what gave her a platform to speak on. And I just love the representation that she gives. She's a woman. She was one of the only women in her law class at Harvard, and I believe there was only seven. And so it's just so beautiful how hard she fought. And not even at the beginning of her life, at the end of her life, she had cancer multiple times, and yet she was still fighting for everyone's rights. And so I just want to go through a couple cases that RBG had decided while she was in the Supreme Court justice, and who she is, and just go through a timeline of her career. So the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of her cases in 1996 was actually United States versus Virginia. So she ruled that the Virginia military institution's male-only admission policy was in violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. So this was able to create a very important precedent for future sex discrimination cases. So thank Ruth Bader Ginsburg if you're able to just be a woman and be allowed in the military with men like you are today. It's just so inspiring that she was able to rule these really influential cases that have a lot of effect on the way we operate today. Another case that she ruled was in 2000 and was Bush versus Gore, and so Justice Ginsburg actually received a lot of attention for her dissenting opinion in this case, which ultimately did decide the outcome of the 2000 election. So even though the court had sided with Bush, Ginsburg signed "I dissent" instead of respectively. That's usually signed in court documents. That was just so brave of her. That was the first time that had ever been done. So I respect her bravery all throughout her years, and especially within this case. And then in 2007, Ledbetter versus Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, this was another landmark case for women's rights. So a female 19-year-old was complaining, and she said that she was getting paid less than her male counterparts and stated this was in violation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And so the court actually voted 5-4 in favor of Goodyear Tire, although Ginsburg once again dissented and famously stated, so this is a quote that Ginsburg actually said when she dissented. She said, "The court's insistence on immediate contest overlooks common characteristics of pay discrimination. Pay disparities often occur, as they did in Ledbetter's case, in small increments and develop over time." So subsequently, in 2009, when Obama took office, the first bill he signed into law was actually the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which prohibits sex-based wage discrimination. So if you get paid the same as your male, if you are a woman and you get paid the same amount as your male counterparts, thank Justice Ginsburg for that. So even in 2018, which is only 2 years ago, in the Sessions versus DiMaia case, Justice Ginsburg was able to help prove the deportation on certain non-citizens was unconstitutional. So James Garcia DiMaia had been a lawful permanent resident in the U.S. since 1993, but he risked his status when he was charged with first degree burglary. And so Ginsburg voted that deporting him would be in violation of the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment. So Ginsburg helped mark a huge win for immigrant rights and was able to really just create a strong precedent for future cases, like she was in a lot of her other cases that she ruled as well. So personally, RBG is my superhero. She really is. And I just want to tell you one of her favorite quotes, my favorite quotes that she has said, which is, "My mother told me to be your own person, be independent." This is just a quote that I love so much, because being a lady doesn't mean cleaning the house. Being a lady doesn't mean staying in your place and while men speak. Being a lady means being who you are. Say what you want to say. And I think this quote just encompasses who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. She had such an influential impact on my life, and I definitely would not be in the place I would be today. And I'm so thankful for not only her rulings that were able to make me equal to my male counterparts, I'm thankful for her influence on my life, and just her legacy, because after even seeing On the Basis of Sex, I just had this epiphany almost that I can do anything I want. I can be just like my male counterparts who are successful. I have the power to really do what I want and be who I want and say what I want to say. And just as Ruth Bader Ginsburg say, I can be a lady by just being who I want. And I think that's so powerful, and every single little girl should hear that. So this is just a very profound loss for our country, for women, for everyone RBG fought for. And I'm just so saddened by the loss of RBG, but I'm also thankful that she fought until the very last minute on the Supreme Court justice, fighting for everyone's rights. And it just attests to her strength and her perseverance. Thank you so much for having me and listening to The Resistance, and I will be right back as I cover everything Breonna Taylor. So if you want to listen to that, make sure to tune back in. Thanks for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Resistance with your host, DJ Revolution, on the one and only Penguin Radio. So, you want to talk about Breonna Taylor. first, I just want to go over how a miscalculation by officers contributed to the tragic death of Breonna Taylor. So, if you don't already know, let me just give you a backstory of what's happening right now and why Breonna Taylor is such a big name in the media right now. So on the morning of March 13th, 2020, police arrested a suspected drug dealer, and his name is Jamarcus Glover. So although near a simultaneous operation across town in Louisville, other officers were ready outside Breonna's apartment, and so they suspected that she was tied with Glover's ring that he had. And Glover also used Taylor's apartment as his residence, even though he was not living there. And so officers rammed down Taylor's door. That suddenly just triggered a fatal chain of events. And so Taylor was accompanied at home with her boyfriend, who was legally armed with a firearm. And so after Taylor's boyfriend shot, because he didn't know who was coming into the house, he didn't know if it was his, if it was the ex-boyfriend, he didn't know it was the cops, and they, he states that they came in without saying they were the police. And so thinking it was someone else breaking into Taylor's home, and her boyfriend shooting and hitting an officer in the leg, an officer blindly fired 10 rounds into Taylor's apartment from an outdoor patio. And so fast forward to now, Louisville is just dealing with the aftermath of a grand jury decision in Breonna Taylor's case. So the most recent protest has even left 46 in custody and two police officers wounded, as they were both shot, but I read that they're both expected to be okay. So protests started after only one officer was charged in Breonna Taylor's case for wanton endangerment. So the officer that was charged wasn't even charged with the murder of Breonna Taylor. And so the Attorney General Cameron actually stated that in his investigation, he said that officers Jonathan Mattingly and Miles Cosgrove were justified in their actions and did announce themselves as police officers before even entering or shooting. But we will honestly never know, because they weren't wearing body cams. And in this day and age, I mean, especially when you're entering a home on a no-knock warrant, you should definitely be wearing body cams. That seems like common sense, but apparently not, because they weren't wearing body cams. And so just last week, the city of Louisville actually announced a $12 million settlement for Taylor's family. And I just find that so crazy, because they gave her family $12 million for her wrongful death. So I'm just confused as to why no one is being charged with her wrongful murder. Because you just don't give out $12 million. I mean, it has to be justified. And with the $12 million actually comes along police reforms as well. So if there's police, if something needs to be reformed, it had to be broken in the first place. But the Attorney General Cameron said there was nothing wrong with the way they operated. And I find it crazy, because I think of this comparison with a nurse. If a nurse was to walk into the wrong patient's room and give that patient the wrong medication, and God forbid that medication killed the patient, the nurse would then lose her job, lose her license, and go to jail. And again, I think this is just common sense. When you wrongfully kill someone, you have to go to jail and get charged with that. So honestly, right now I'm just so sorry, so heartbroken for Breonna Taylor, that she has not deserved the justice she deserves. And no amount of money will bring Breonna Taylor back. Her killers are free. while she doesn't have the luxury of walking, talking, laughing, and loving again, she doesn't have the luxury of just living her life because she was murdered wrongfully. And I'm just thinking of all the people that knew Brianna before she became a hashtag, the people that raised her, the ones who laughed with her, those who cried with her. They didn't deserve this. Brianna Taylor didn't deserve this. And I often think of Brianna Taylor as myself, as a minority. I think, could I be murdered in my home and then many people just use me as a hashtag and as a political symbol and justify the officers when I was sleeping in my home? And so I think Brianna Taylor really strung a chord for me because I really think of her in terms of myself, and a lot of people I know justify the officer's actions. So I just wonder if the same had happened to me and they knew me and they loved me and they cared for me, would they still justify the officer's actions? And so I just think a lot of human beings, they just reach a point of emotional overwhelm based on the body's capacity to just handle only so much. And so this, I read, is known as our freeze response or shutdown. And a lot of people are experiencing this now. The exhaustion of injustice is overwhelming and numbing at the same time, because as a minority, this isn't just a popular thing for me right now. This isn't just, oh, Black Lives Matter is popular for me now, so I'm advocating for it. No, this is my life. I live this every single day, and I think a lot of other minorities feel this way as well, where we don't necessarily talk about every day, but we deal with the struggles of being a minority every single day. And so it's kind of heart-wrenching when a minority's death just becomes politicized because it almost takes away their humanity. I think a lot of the time people were just putting hashtag Breonna Taylor, but we really weren't thinking of her in terms of a person. I think a lot of times they were posting that because they were like, this is what everybody else is doing, this is the right thing to do, and if I post this, people will subsequently see me as being a good person and doing the right thing. And that's in terms of politicians, of famous people, of regular people. I think that's, everyone gets caught up in this kind of current age of doing what is seen and popular right now. And I think if you saw last month, everyone posted a black square, and I seen a lot of people posted a black square but didn't post how Breonna Taylor did not receive justice. And so for me, I'm honestly just sad, I'm heartbroken, and I'm frustrated that we have to still deal with a system that does not advocate for Black women. I'm not surprised, though, because the system that we reside in has never advocated or spoke up for minorities in general. And so this decision on Breonna Taylor's case is saddening, and it's frightening, and it's horrible, honestly, that this could happen to me. But it's not surprising at all, because it's happened before so many times. And I honestly just wish that a cop that shot a Black woman was not only charged for the shots missed. I think that's the most heart-wrenching part of this narrative, is that Walls received more justice than Breonna Taylor's life. And I think we need to stop thinking in terms of, oh, she was an African-American woman, so we have to do this. No, she was a human. She was a sister. She was a daughter. She was a girlfriend. She was a human. And so that alone, a human losing their life, should outrage anybody. And the fact that it's not outraging people enough to convict the people that killed her really honestly baffles me. It really does baffle me, because if anyone dies, regardless of the circumstances, I'm saddened. And so I'm extremely disappointed that Breonna Taylor did not receive the death, that Breonna Taylor did not receive the justice she deserved because she was politicized. This is The Resistance, and you're with your host, DJ Revolution. Thank you so much for listening to what I have to say. I will be right back with everything election and the upcoming debates and how it's looking at the polls right now. So I will talk to you in a little bit. Welcome back, everyone, to The Resistance with your host, DJ Revolution, on the one and only Penguin Radio. So let's just jump into the upcoming election and especially the upcoming debate, which I am so excited for. I've been waiting so long for the debates to start. And so the first debate is on the 29th of September in Cleveland, Ohio. And I can't even describe how ecstatic I am for this debate, because I know it's going to be a mess, but I also know it's going to just be pure entertainment, because let's not lie to ourselves. Neither of the candidates are the best public speakers or debaters. Like, it's going to be crazy, but let's just say I'm going to grab my popcorn and get ready for the crazy ride. So, well, at least Trump is going to be captivating. We all know that because of his lack of common sense. And so here's just the format of the debate. So first will be Trump and Biden's records. Then will be Supreme Court. And of course, this will be a hot topic because of the recent passing of RBG. Then will be the coronavirus pandemic. And I really hope that the moderator brings up questions over the 200,000, more than 200,000 American people that have died on American soil from the coronavirus pandemic, and whether or not that death toll is in direct relation to Trump's actions. And then there will be race. The next topic will be race protests and violence in cities. And of course, this is a huge topic right now, just because of what's happening surrounding the Breonna Taylor case and the officers injured right now, because of the protests surrounding the grand jury decision of the Breonna Taylor case. And so the next one will be election integrity, and this is a huge one as well, because mail-in ballots, because we're in this little thing, if you didn't know, called a global pandemic that makes getting together in person a little hard. And the final piece will be the economy, and this is a huge piece because a large majority of suburban white voters actually care about the economy more than any other issue. And so I know a lot of Trump supporters, this election is honestly a one issue election for them, as they really just care about the economy, and that's something they really harp on. So Trump and Biden will each receive 2 minutes apiece to respond to a question initially before the back and forth begins. And oh, am I so excited for that back and forth, because I know there's going to be a lot of low blows and not a lot of smart things said. So the moderators this year, well, in this debate, will be Fox News Sunday anchor, which is Chris Wallace. He is a Democrat. And then in Miami, C-SPAN's political editor, Steve Scully, will be moderating. So in regards to viewer turnout, viewership is actually on the decline, but millions of Americans still do tune in regularly to watch the debates. And I know personally that ever since I've been old enough and mature enough to grasp what is really going on in the political realm, I've always tuned in to every single debate. I think the first one I really watched and cared about was in 2016. I was only a freshman in high school, and I really watched every single one right after basketball practice and skipped my homework to just watch Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton argue. And so even this past presidential primary debates, I hosted a debate party at my home that honestly really categorized me as the school nerd if I wasn't already the school nerd. And so I had popcorn, and a bunch of my other nerdy friends came over to my house, and we all gathered around my TV and watched the presidential primary debates and kind of debated and discussed amongst ourselves who we were voting for in the primary, and you know, just everything political. And so I've always been really fond of the debates, because I just, not only are they informational and educational for me, they are also just entertainment. And I even sometimes just go back on YouTube and watch the 2016 debates for a good laugh, because there's a lot of little moments that you would think are, it is just an SNL skit, but then you're like, no, this is actually a real debate. This isn't a satirical skit. And so I just love the debates because they're funny and they teach me a lot. And I believe that it's our civic duty to be politically informed, and our civic duty is our rent for living. And so I really take being informed politically serious. So every single debate I will tune into. But in all seriousness, the debate really helps voters cement their candidate of choice. And so in contentious years, the debates can be super big. So like I mentioned before, in 2016, the first debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton actually saw a record of 84 million viewers. That is a lot. And so I think the debates will really highlight Joe Biden's performance, just because after 3.5 years, we know Trump's highs and lows, especially his lows. So many lows. In fact, I don't think it can get any lower. So debates have actually affected elections before. So in fact, the first televised debate in history in 1960 between Kennedy and Nixon allowed Kennedy to be perceived as more youthful, because his team made sure he was dressed in a nice suit and he looked good. And then Nixon was combating a sickness and just getting over that, so he was just recovering from an illness. And at times he was even seen wiping sweat off his brow, so that made him look older and just ill, because he was ill. So Kennedy, after the debates, then saw a jump in the polls. And so debates do have the potential to affect an election. Overall, not at dramatic measures where all Trump supporters will become Biden supporters after the debates, but after some debates, you can see a slight shift in the polls, so they are important. And I'm just excited for these debates and have been waiting for them for so long, as I mentioned before. And so my expectations are honestly so low for both Biden and Trump. I think a stellar performance from the both of them would be if they were just a tiny bit coherent. I'm not expecting a lot, but like I said before, I am just so excited to just see them engage on screen. And I'm honestly even more excited for the vice presidential debates between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence. I think that will definitely be a debate worth watching, and they're both good debaters as well, so I think that will be an awesome debate. But with Donald Trump and Joe Biden, they both have their flaws when it comes to public speaking, and they both don't really, they aren't the most captivating speakers, and so I think it will just be almost like a satirical skit watching them kind of debate against each other. But I'm so excited, and I cannot wait for next week's episode to talk about the debate and the information that was said throughout the debate. So I'm so excited for next week's episode so I can talk about the debates with you guys. Thank you so much for listening to The Resistance. You are with your host, DJ Revolution, and I hope you join us right back in the next segment when we talk about the coronavirus pandemic and how it is affecting Americans. Hello, and welcome back to The Resistance. You are with your host, DJ Revolution, and we are on the one and only Penguin Radio. So let's just talk about this little thing we're in right now. It's called a global pandemic. You might have heard of it, but it's just changed our lives in so many ways possible. For me, I should be in my college dorm right now, but instead I'm sitting in my childhood home. And so that's always fun, right? And so the coronavirus pandemic has affected and changed so many facets in our life, and it's also showcasing and worsening inequity, not only in America, but all over the world. And so the pandemic is notably widening these social and economic divisions that allow the virus to be deadlier, so it's acting as this fatal cycle, and it's just creating a self-reinforcing cycle, like I said, that experts warn could have consequences for not only this year, but years to come. I know, if 2020 could get better, I mean, I don't want another 2020, but it looks like this is going to happen for the next couple years. And so in many societies where the virus hits, it is deepening consequences of inequality, pushing so many burdens on lower economic class citizens in today's polarized economies. And so those that reside in less financially stable climates are more likely to contract COVID and die from COVID. And so those that are not as financially stable are hit the worst right now. And even for those who will remain healthy after they contract COVID are more likely to suffer loss of income or healthcare or even their homes as a result of quarantines and other necessary medical precautions. And because of the fear of losing their homes, their healthcare, and their jobs, some of these people that are in need still go to work if they are sick. And so that just worsens the toll of COVID on this financially unstable population. And so inequality also acts as a multiplier on the coronavirus pandemic, as research on the influenza has actually shown that in an epidemic, poverty and inequality have the same potential to exacerbate transmission rates and overall mortality rates. And the coronavirus is solely widening socioeconomic divides that creates this fatal mutually reinforcing cycle. So the same people, so the people affected are just being hit so hard right now, because they're getting hit economically, they're getting hit health-wise, and it's just coming full circle. And as inequality has risen, health disparities have widened as well. And so preventative care and health education have steadily tilted towards the educated and well-off. So a lot of lower economic status citizens have not had exposure to preventative care or even educational resources of how to maybe wear your mask properly or properly wash your hands. And so this is really affecting that community as well, that's already being affected drastically from the pandemic right now. And so with all that being said, the pandemic is not over because you are tired of social distancing, masks, and weird smelling hand sanitizers. The hand sanitizers have been smelling so weird lately. I don't know if they're watering the hand sanitizer down. I don't know if they're adding something to the hand sanitizer, but I've noticed every time I go to a big chain store that offers free hand sanitizer to pump it if you're pushing a cart or if you're touching something, it doesn't smell like the old hand sanitizer. It's like as soon as COVID came, there was a new COVID hand sanitizer that has a weird smell. And so we're all tired of it. We're all tired of the weird smelling hand sanitizers, the social distancing, and the masks. I'm probably the most tired of it because I wish I was at college right now. But just because we're tired of it doesn't mean that the pandemic doesn't mean the pandemic stops. Coronavirus doesn't listen to our complaining. And so I think it's important to act like we were acting at the beginning of this, to act with precautions and to act with, you know, just like we care for each other. And so I think that's so important. I think a lot of people, as the virus continues to spread and it's just becoming really our new normal, people are just forgetting that we still have to be careful, because if we spread it to someone, they could potentially die. If it spread to me, I will probably be fine because I'm a young person that's healthy, but a person I spread it to might not. And I think it's really important that we not only look out for ourselves, but look out for others, and we continue to just mask up and follow health precautions. And I think it's always important to remember that your rights end where my rights begin. And by wearing a mask in public, you're not only protecting your life, you're protecting mine as well, and the countless other lives that I run into or you run into. And so I just think it's really important to think of your fellow human during this unprecedented time, and just mask up, do your part. And I think we as Americans obtain the capacity to get past this horrible global pandemic that has ravaged so many communities. Even though more than 200,000 Americans have died, sadly, and I think that's a sad loss, I think we still have the potential to turn this around, especially with new guidelines that might be implemented after the election. And so I'm hopeful that we will be able to implement new health precautions that will help America out of this deadly cycle that we're in, where, you know, people are dying at an unprecedented rate, especially those within a lower economic status. And so, as I said before, inequality has risen, health disparities have widened, and preventative care is solely directed at those who are well educated or more financially stable. And so that has just really created a large gap in America between those who are well off and have the right resources to combat COVID and those who have to go to work every single day, whether or not they are living with someone elderly who could possibly die from COVID if they contract it. And so I think in America, there's these two different worlds right now that everyone is experiencing. And either you're on the side that is privileged enough to say, hey, I'm not going to go to work because I don't want to contract COVID, or you're on the side that's just in this fatal cycle of getting hit by, you know, economic disparities and socioeconomic disparities and health disparities. And so I think that just makes it all the more important to just care about your fellow human and be empathetic more than anything else. Just be understanding. And like I said, I'm hopeful that we will be able to get over this. And I think we'll be able to. We just all have to work together and be understanding of one another. Thank you for listening to Welcome to the Resistance. I'm your host, DJ Revolution, and I hope you listen next time to Welcome to the Resistance, where we are crazy enough to believe the world can change. And I hope you tune in, because like I said in my earlier segment, that next week is the first presidential debate. And so in my next show, I will be thoroughly analyzing everything that has been that will be said in the presidential debate next Wednesday. Yes, correct. And so I'm so excited to have a conversation with you guys then. Have a great day.